Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, author of the week. Today we have Nuala Elwood, author of both My Sister's Bones and her latest, The Day of the Accident. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Nuala.
Thank you for having me. I'm really pleased to be here.
Day of the Accident is a thriller, and we're not going to give any spoilers, but I want you to introduce us to the story.
Okay, so Day of the Accident tells a story of Maggie, who wakes up from a coma to be told that her daughter has died in a car crash. She was driving the car, and not only that, but her husband has left and sold their house too. So Maggie really is in a terrible predicament, but she has to piece together what has happened, and she can't shake the feeling that her daughter is actually somewhere out there alive. So we have to, we follow Maggie on her journey to discover the truth.
And she can't remember anything at first.
No.
And things come back bit by bit. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the structure of the book, because it is a fast-paced thriller. Mm-hmm. And yet it's just her reconstructing.
Yeah.
What has happened.
Uh-huh. So what we have is she wakes up in the coma with absolutely no recollection of what's happened. But as the story progresses, we go back and forth into Maggie's distant and near past. And we find out all sorts of clues and hints, suggestions of what might have happened. But also interweaving amongst these chapters are letters written by a little girl who signs off as your lovely daughter, addressed to Maggie, or to Mummy, rather, and we are left to work out who this little girl is, and we don't find out until the end, but could she be Maggie's daughter? Who knows? We need to kind of piece that together.
And you have the feeling throughout that not only are you playing with the protagonist, but you're also playing with the reader. Is that something? Is that your little cat, us mice, and you the cat? Is that something you like, pulling the strings?
I don't know whether I like pulling the strings, but it's definitely something that comes through in my writing, particularly of this genre, and for the writer as well. You know what's going to happen, and part of that kind of skill is in kind of holding back and letting the story come out in you know, teasing the reader, which, yes, I do enjoy. I would say that does come out in the later drafts. The first draft, you just want to get everything out. And then you start to look at the structure. But yes, it surprises me just as much as it does the reader, because this story did take me in directions that I didn't anticipate. So I was kind of the mouse at certain times just as much.
And are thrillers something you enjoy reading?
A mixture, really. I kind of, literary thrillers, I mean, my kind of favourite authors, I would say, Pat Barker. I grew up reading Pat Barker. Paul Auster, I love. Virginia Woolf, who comes through in this novel. But I kind of also like the kind of, Ruth Rendell was somebody I read a lot of when I was growing up as well, and I think she's a great weaver of mystery and plot. And so, yeah, a mixture of things. I'm always drawn to the dark side, though, so I think that's what comes through in the gothic elements.
Yes.
Supernatural, very much so.
Excellent. I had to read the book quickly because I was going to be meeting you, and yet I don't think I read it any quicker than I would have anyway. It is
okay.
The kind of book that you would read in a sitting.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You really want to know what's going on.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It is set in Rodmel, as you said, mm-hmm. which was the home of Virginia Woolf.
Yeah.
There's a very strong theme in the book about women, about women's right to write.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is something, I mean, I first discovered that part of Sussex when I was pregnant with my now 11-year-old boy, and at the time was kind of at a bit of a crossroads myself and working out what would become of me and what would become of the person I am, which is I've always written all my life. And when I become a mother, and I had lots of scaremongers around me saying your life will never be the same again and you'll never, you know, get to do anything and all these kind of things. And it transpired that I ended up, when I had my little boy, he actually gave me the impetus to get my books published. I went back and did an MA in creative writing. So all this kind of scaremongering that a child changes your life for the worse, particularly from a creative point of view, for me that didn't ring true. But a few years ago, I did a project called Writing Motherhood with Carolyn Jess Cook, who is an award-winning poet and author. And part of that involved going around the country giving workshops and talking about writing and motherhood to mothers with children, older mothers who'd had children and were writing and wanted to write. And one of the most kind of depressing things I found in the feedback from that were not the quality of the work, which is fantastic, and the impetus and the need to have that creativity, but the sense that these women felt that, particularly as mothers, they had to do their writing in secret, that it was a guilty pleasure, a luxury. And I remember thinking, you know, I'd grown up in a creative household, my dad's a journalist, my brother's an actor, we were kind of encouraged, our creativity was encouraged, but I think there's a lot of people who've been brought up or socialized to believe that creativity is something that it is a luxury. It's not something you earn your living from. It's not something you should be doing. And that really sparked the idea for the character of Maggie, because Maggie has had all sorts of, you know, she hasn't had the best start in life. She's had something horrible happened to her in her teenage years, which I won't spoil for the reader. And that's kind of set her life on a course where she's got all these ideas and creativity, but no outlet really. And she has the child and she feels guilt-ridden that she's not spending enough time with the child because she wants to. She's got this burning need to write. And that's where we find her in the book before the accident happens. And so it's exploring that sense that, you know, we, as parents even, not just mothers, we beat ourselves up for the most, you know, insane reasons, guilt all the time. And I think that the creativity can actually enhance ourselves as mothers and as parents. And I think it should be encouraged. And I hope through this book and through the character of Maggie, that's something that I leave the reader with.
I was going to say, because it sounds to me like almost that the scaremongering around your creativity post-motherhood sort of almost spurred you on.
Yeah, you know? I want to prove them wrong.
Damn it, yeah. I am going to, you know, write.
Definitely. Yeah. It really did, yeah. Mm.
But it also makes me think, you know, the Virginia Woolf piece, A Room of One's Own, mm-hmm. even a space in one's head.
Yeah.
Of one's own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're finding is still, in this day and age, we don't automatically assume that it's okay
mm-hmm.
to have a space in your life for creativity, for writing, for yourself.
Absolutely.
As a parent.
And you know, when you have a child, it brings, he or she brings with it so much stuff so that actually physical space to write becomes something of a luxury. And I know Virginia Woolf's idea that a woman should have a room of one's own, that's something that's always stayed with me, but it could even be a corner of a room, do you know what I mean? And I think another thing I wanted to put across with this is as a working novelist, as a writer who has a child, and as a woman, one of the first things invariably that you're asked, not here, thankfully, but is how do you juggle? How do you juggle your work and your child? And dads, fathers, are not asked this question, and they, you know, have to juggle just as much. And it's all, and so even within that question, there's a sense of guilt, i.e., why are you here? Where's your child? And who's looking after it? And dads just don't generally get that question. And
well, also, I don't think male novelists, successful or unsuccessful, are questioned or whether they have the right to write.
I know, you know. Precisely. Yeah. Whereas with women, it's almost one of the first questions you're asked. So again, there's all sorts of things that we have to overcome and deal with before you can actually get down to the nitty gritty of writing.
Tell me about, because I didn't read, but I'm always on the lookout for a good read. Tell me about My Sister's Bones, which was your first thriller.
Yes, My Sister's Bones was inspired by the death of Marie Colvin, who was the legendary Sunday Times foreign correspondent, who I met when I was in my 20s, and I was working at the Chelsea Arts Club in London, and she came in to give a talk, and she was just the most wonderful speaker and person. I was just mesmerized by her, because I was at a point at that time, I was in my early 20s, I'd just left university, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, I was, you know, all over the place. And feeling a little bit scared at that point. And she rounded up her talk by saying this wonderful line that bravery is not being afraid to be afraid. And that stayed with me for so long as a person. And then when I heard that she died in Homs in 2012, I was already getting this idea for, I'd always wanted to write about female war reporters. And my dad had been, he was a journalist, he'd gone and covered the post-Civil War Beirut, and was friends with Robert Fisk, so we had that around us growing up. But I was always fascinated by the female war reporter and being heard in a predominantly male environment, and what it is that a female war reporter brings to it, which I always felt with Marie Colvin, you wouldn't hear about the make of rockets that landed on the village, but you would hear about what they'd had for dinner that night, or what the name of the child was, and in a certain way it gets you right, by focusing on the domestic, we can all relate to it, that could have been us or our child that it happened to. So with this story, it told the story of Kate Rafter, who was a female war reporter covering the war in Syria. She's had a catastrophic experience out there. She comes back, her mother's died, she comes back to sort out her mother's affairs to Herne Bay, which is this quite dark and eerie seaside town. It's beautiful, but has dark connotations on the North Kent coast. And while there, she hears a scream coming from the house next door. She thinks something untoward is happening, but we, as the reader, slowly gets to know that she's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. So we have to work out whether there really is something dreadful happening, or whether it's just a manifestation of her troubles, and it has dark and disastrous consequences.
Following our goth theme.
Yes, yeah, lighthearted as usual.
And what was it that interested you about PTSD in particular?
I just found, I got talking to a guy called Dr. Anthony Feinstein, who's the head of psychiatry at the University of Toronto, and he had written a book called Journalists Under Fire, and it was talking to him that really kind of made me look at it in a whole new light. He'd been referred a patient who was a female war reporter, and she was describing her symptoms, and he thought, classic PTSD, so he immediately went to see what else had been written about it, and found that there was absolutely nothing. No kind of research had been gone into the link between PTSD and war reporting. So he produced this seminal work and spoke to past and present war reporters. But the thing that was really interesting for me is that for war reporters in particular, because they're not the aid workers and because they're not the soldiers, they're not actually actively involved, they're the observer. So there's a sense that they can't, you know, they can't be affected, yet they are. And there's also a sense that they can't actually affect change. They're not bandaging people up, they're not holding a gun. So they feel this sense of guilt, which is a massive part of PTSD. But a lot of war reporters, and my dad kind of talked to me about this with his experiences, that if you, particularly at a certain time, say, you know, the 80s, 70s, 80s, going back, if you said that you were suffering or you were having a hard time, you'd be very discreetly moved to a desk job. So, you know, that would be that. You don't show that things are happening. And I thought, well, that would be the case. If that was the case with men, if you were a woman and you're trying to make yourself heard, you'd be even less likely to look for help. So that really helped shape and the character of Kate Rafter, and also remembering the words of Marie Colvin, that bravery is not being afraid to be afraid. So it's looking at the vulnerability and how that actually can enhance the work. But I mean, yes, it's a huge subject, PTSD, and I think not only with war reporters, any of us can be affected by it. But I did find that the more I researched it, and the more I was researching this book, because I was the war in Aleppo was actually going on as I was writing it, and I was looking at things every single day, and I have a little boy, and I found myself becoming hypervigilant, not sleeping. I was literally checking on Luke every minute of the day. Where are you? Are you okay? And I thought, my goodness, I'm almost getting it, you know, via osmosis. So if I can feel like that just by looking at things on a screen, what on earth must it feel like to actually be there, you know? So it gave me the level of research gave me a real insight into that, and I think it's something that's still developing and still being understood as we go on.
I think that's a very interesting point that you bring up, because journalists' job, well, one of the most difficult aspects of it is the fact that you are not supposed to insert yourself into mm-hmm. the story. Mm. And that very holding back, and that you showed up there voluntarily.
Yeah.
You know, so those two things combined. And we are so quick to blame ourselves mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah.
So all of those things combined.
Well, I think
really
that's it, that iconic picture in Ethiopia of Kevin Carter, the photographer, with the child and the vulture, the child being pecked at by a vulture. And he took that photograph, but he didn't intervene. And he ended up committing suicide years later. And upon reading about it, it was like that incident haunted him for the rest of his life, and stuff that you can't actually go in and change anything or intercept. And I think that does play a huge part in what it does to the psyche.
Tell me about your other writing, because I can tell from just reading Day of the Accident that your reading is widespread. Your love of literature is widespread, and you also teach creative writing. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what reading, writing, and that whole literary world means to you, because I kind of think it's a little bit in danger.
Yes, it is, yeah. For me, luckily enough, I was brought up in a household where reading was encouraged. My dad's Irish and a journalist, so we grew up, you know, Yeats
talking and reading.
Absolutely. So from an early age, that was what I loved. And it wasn't even a choice of, I still don't see it as a job or a career. It's something that's part of me and something that I love to do. It's how I make sense of the world. And I think particularly in terms of reading and writing, what we're losing at the moment is that sense of, and what I experience sometimes within teaching is that focus. I think reading a book, you're not only getting involved in the story, you're seeing what language can do, and you're seeing what the writer, the way that the writer can manipulate you as a reader, the journey that you can be taken on, and it's a wonderful investment. It's that hand being held out across many years, or even, you know, just across a page and holding yours and saying, I understand. That's what I have always felt about reading and writing. And I think in terms of technology is kind of advancing at such a great speed that we're losing something of that focus and the attention. And I find it myself as a writer when I've got to deal with social media regularly and what that does to your focus. You know, you can do it in a way that's sensible and keep it contained, but there's nothing like reading and getting kind of that wonderful sense of being immersed in other worlds that I think children particularly need to come back to. I know as a mother, I've always encouraged, never pushed, but encouraged my little boy to read, and it's lovely seeing him, you know, whenever he wants to find something out, he'll go and look in a book, and in this day and age where you could just Google it's quite rare, but I think it offers you something else, and I think even if you're not a big reader, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful sense of meditation and kind of peace, really. But yeah, the focus and attention to detail and that short attention span is something that really concerns me about technology at the moment.
I think it's important to remember that all those scripts that we're sitting there watching, they're written. Mm-hmm. It starts on the page.
Absolutely.
And I think we've just forgotten that.
Yeah.
Somewhere mm-hmm. along the line, yeah. That's forgotten. Because on the other hand, we're saying that. But I did find Day of the Accident could easily translate to the screen. Mm-hmm. It is pacey. It is very visual. You know, I get to picture who these people are first, mm-hmm. because obviously it's in my head because yeah. I've been reading. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when it gets to the screen, you know, other people decide that.
Yeah.
But there is, you know, there is there is a difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's why I always loved radio as well growing up, because you fill in the blanks yourself, and it's lovely. It's not bombarding you with images. I mean, television and film have their place, and that's wonderful, but there is something lovely where you've got to actually... It's actively reading as well. That's something I always encourage in students. You know, it's a two-way street, and what you're doing as well as what the writer is doing is very subtle, but very important. And I think, again, when we're just given things, very, you know, fast-paced images, it can be very destructive. I think also handwriting. I used to do calligraphy when I was younger, and I had the most lovely handwriting. And now I look at my handwriting, it's like a GP. It's really messy. I need to go back to my neat handwriting, which, again, with our reliance on phones and laptops, I do try to do some of my work longhand in the initial stages. Kind of the hands to brain connection, but I think we've lost a little bit of that as well over time, because I think handwriting is another lovely thing that needs to be nurtured.
All right, well, if you want both an old-fashioned and up-to-date thriller, Day of the Accident is out on February 21st. Nuala Elwood, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And for more thrilling women, go to radiogorgeous.com.